WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Comic actor Steve Coogan is just becoming known to American audiences, but he's been a household name in Britain for years. BBC viewers know him through his alter ego Alan Partridge, a self-absorbed and clueless TV talk show host and radio DJ. And as we'll hear, he's a masterful impressionist. Steve Coogan has appeared in the films Coffee and Cigarettes, Happy Endings, 24-Hour Party People, and Tristram Shandy, A Cock and Bull Story, which has just come out on DVD. Terry spoke to Coogan earlier this year when Tristram Shandy was released.
Now, you've done a lot of impressions over the years. You got started, I think, on Spitting Image, which was a puppet satire of politics in England, and you did voices for that. Were you always good at impressions?
Yeah, I did. You know, I used to do lots of voices, and it was a way into the business. You know, it's very difficult these days to try and get on as an actor. Very difficult. So you have to kind of do a quick trick, something that gets someone's attention very quickly to be noticed. And impressions were one of those things. I used to do a lot of people like, you know, actors and politicians. I do
Roger Moore and speak like that in a very reserved kind of way. I do Sean Connery, who, of course, has that real deep Scottish brogue. And
I do people like Michael Caine, who are altogether slightly different, with a very, very slight Cockney sound to their voice.
My God, that's perfect. That was really perfect.
Well, thank you very much.
Has he heard you do that?
Michael Caine hasn't. Roger Moore has. In fact, I had Alan Partridge actually interviewed Roger Moore for real a couple of years ago for a homeless charity in London.
Oh, gosh.
He agreed to do it. He was a very good sport. He didn't mind Alan being ill-informed and wanting constantly to talk about James Bond, which is something that Roger Moore, I'm sure, has moved on from a long time ago. So he was a great sport about that. And he knew that I'd been one of the people who'd satirized him and poked fun at him on Spitting Image. But there's a very good kind of all the kind of... The British may have their faults, but I think being able to laugh at themselves is one that they're quite good at.
It must be odd for you when you're playing a character in real life interviewing a real person. Roger Moore's part wasn't scripted, right?
Semi-scripted.
Oh,
I mean,
I gave him
some ripostes because I knew Alan was going to say unsympathetic things to him.
Like what?
And I said something like, "Do you think I'd
make a good spy, Roger?"
I think he said something like,
"No, to be a spy, you have to be subtle, well observed, discreet, and intelligent."
So, of course, you know, that didn't sit very well with Alan. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah. And the character was quite popular in England. I did an interview with Elton John on this TV show, and that was great fun because I said to him beforehand, I said, "Do you mind if I'm quite rude to you as Alan?" And he said, "Do your worst," you know. So I was pretty merciless with him, you know. I said that, you know, I said, as Alan, you know, you, you're, you know, I sort of talked about the fact that he was gay.
What did you say to him about being gay?
I said something like, "You are a gay man." I said, you know, and you're allowed, you know, something about the kind of suit he was wearing. I think he was wearing a pink suit. And I talked about it being, you know, you wouldn't have worn that years ago, but after you, you know, came out, I can't remember what it was, something about him coming out and, you know, wearing a pink suit and how I wouldn't wear something like that. And because Alan's slightly, I think, sort of very, ever so slightly, he's never very malicious, but there's just, he's ever, ever so slightly homophobic, which makes for good comedy, of course, especially when you're interviewing Elton John.
So how did you come up with the voice for Alan Partridge?
Well, you listen to lots of broadcasters on... I used to do lots of voiceovers, actually, on TV commercials. You know, the kind of, "If you want a better deal from Ford, get down to blah, blah, blah today. It's only, you know..."
Did you really?
$48 a month and all that kind of, like, APR, 22%, blah, blah, blah. You know, I do all that kind of stuff, cramming in those inane, nasty, cheap, disposable radio commercials that we all try and avoid but seem to intrude into our lives every day. So I did a lot of that, and you get familiar with these kind of, some broadcasters, you get the idea, seem probably love the sound of their own voice a bit too much.
Those people who speak with a very deep, warm brown voice on radio shows where they talk in a very sort of subtle way like that, and you get the impression that they like the ups and downs of the timbre of their own voice.
that kind of thing. You hear all that stuff. And there is there's certain people who, because they are thinking as they speak, will emphasize any word arbitrarily for no reason whatsoever. So there's no proper syntax to what they're saying. And you just think, why are they speaking like that? And they say, well, obviously, because they're not quite sure what they're saying. So there used to be, there's a certain fashion in Britain at the moment for Scottish and Welsh accents, but very, very subtly applied. So you'll often see an Irish also, which used to be a real no-no, because, of course, 50 years ago, Irish were second-class citizens in England. But now that you'll hear them, you'll often hear people on adverts with a very slight Irish accent like that, because it's seen as approachable and friendly and not distant like a lot of British accents. And you'll hear the Scottish for the same reason, because, of course, they were oppressed by the English, so, of course, they can't be all bad. So that's used a lot, because then it has that kind of slight anti-establishment vibe about it, which makes something appear less governmental, I think.
Did you study voice, or did you just, like, pick all this up yourself?
I studied it a little bit. I went to drama school to study, and they teach you how to... because I'm from the north, and of course, you learn what they call received pronunciation, which has always made me laugh, which was stemmed from the way you were supposed to be received by royalty.
Is that what it means? I've heard that expression. I've never understood what it meant.
Yeah, no, it's not received. It's the accent with which it was... You had an accent which was acceptable for you to be received by royalty, which, of course, is complete nonsense these days, because the way the royals speak is not, and no one else on earth speaks like that, I think. The way they speak in sort of slightly upper class, before you can't quite deal with the scene, it's already dipped, and sort of they didn't move the lips very much. It's a ridiculous way to speak. But what they generally mean these days is kind of like sort of BBC English, which is very sort of accentless, and I guess it's what you're kind of CNN newscasters sound like would be the American equivalent. That was what they taught you to speak there, because, of course, I'm from Manchester, so I have a northern accent, a regional accent, which is what it was, quite pronounced.
So what were you supposed to fix in your speech?
Oh, well, I mean, for things like, in your accent, you'd say things like, I'm going upstairs to have a bath, is how I would have said it in my original accent, whereas in actual fact, when you do receive pronunciation, then you have to say, I'm going to go upstairs to have a bath. So there's little sort of subtle variations that you become aware of, and it's also very Britain's quite class ridden, and very aware of class in a way that's not as prominent in America. Although I think obviously class is a real issue, it's something that people are acutely aware of in Britain. So, and your accent says a lot about that. So. You can sort of, and people, whether they like it or not, do make judgments. Put it this way, if I'm on the phone complaining about something not being delivered on time, I use my poshest voice possible to intimidate the person on the other end. whereas if I'm trying to, if there's some kind of big heavy guy who's being a bit threatening to me, I'll drop my H's and T's to sort of talk to him on his level, so he doesn't think I'm some rarefied Poncy bloke.
Just one more question. Do you feel like when you're working in more or less your own voice, do you feel like you're almost working with your hands tied behind your back because you have this incredible gift for voices and you're just using your regular old voice in it?
Yes and no. Sometimes it's easier because it's more relaxing. It's like acting in your own clothes. If you wear your own clothes, you wear the clothes you're comfortable in. If I put on, as I have done for when I played a woman on stage once, If you put on things that are uncomfortable, or you've got to dress up in things that are strange, then it's easier to be different. But it's just and it's easier to look more interesting. You know, if I put a hat on and lipstick and wear a corset and high heels, I'm certainly going to look slightly more interesting, if not particularly pleasant, than I look right now. And the same thing goes with your voice. If you put a voice on, it's kind of easier to get people's attention, but it's not so comfortable. You know, I spent so many years, you know, putting on silly voices and wearing wigs and moustaches and beards and things that irritate your face, that getting a chance to wear my own clothes and speak in my own voice was like a kind of holiday.
Steve Coogan, a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Steve Coogan speaking with Terry Gross. His film Tristram Shandy, A Cock and Bull Story, is now out on DVD.